Hi, welcome to Lili Logic. I am Lili, also known as Lisa Smith Henderson, me without the masks. You can go to lililogic.com to find out more. And I am so excited to have reconnected with someone I knew back in the day. My kids were young, and Doc Anderson was a part of their lives, a part of the church I was going to, our lives there. And we ran into each other at a family wedding and got to reconnect. So, Doc, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be having this conversation with you and to reconnect. It's great.
Just you were like, how much do you know of my story? I'm like, oh, it's pretty skeletal. And then when you filled me in yesterday, I was like, oh, yeah, I was missing some big hunks. So, I knew you and your partner, and when you taught at the school that my kids went to, and things changed a lot for you after his death. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like? I mean, without getting into too much of the grief process, but I think that was probably a big part.
Sure. Yeah. So his death was this actually the sixth of six inner circle family and friends that I had lost within a span of 3 years, including two other colleagues from the school and some other lifelong friends. It was just too much for me to take, right? And I had long been a social drug user, but had managed to keep things in check. And then when he passed, things just went off the rails, and I was self-medicating to deal with the depression, which of course only makes the depression worse. As a result, I ended up losing all of my employment because I was not being a good employee at any of the places that I was working. So I turned to selling to support my habit.
Gotcha. Sounds right. I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, so I hear you. And then what happened? I mean, your bottom was fairly dramatic.
So, as it turns out, selling drugs to support your habit is not a good idea. And
Note to self, right?
right. And so I ended up in trouble with the authorities, and I went to federal prison for 2 years as a guest of the federal government. I often say that my time away at the spa, I refer to it with lots of different in lots of different ways, but different nicknames for that time. But yeah, so 2 years in federal prison. But I was super fortunate because the prison that I went to had a really great drug rehab program that I volunteered for. And they can't make you go through rehab. It can be recommended that you go through rehab, but then you have to volunteer for it and really actively participate in it. And so it was really the hardest thing I've ever done. Was that rehab program? It was 10 months residential, really intensive treatment.
Tell me what was difficult about it.
Oh gosh, the constant self-examination and having a mirror held up to you, saying, I call it high-intensity therapy that we had. Because if you're going to a therapist out in the free world, you might go once a week or maybe twice a week, and for an hour. And you talk most of the time. And then at the end of the session, the therapist might offer a thought or two, and then that's it. And you come back and you keep going to therapists sometimes for years on end, right? Well, our therapist in this rehab program knew that they had 10 months to fix us. And everybody that was in my housing unit was also in the rehab program with me. And so we were always monitoring each other's behavior so that if we saw behavior in somebody else that we thought might cause them difficulty once they got on the outside, that we could alert them to that behavior and encourage them to change their behavior so they wouldn't have that struggle, on the outside. So it was kind of like 24/7 therapy. And so to be under that kind of microscope for 24 hours a day, basically, it's a lot. And sometimes people pointed out things that were, unflattering or embarrassing or whatever. And we just had to say, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for sharing.
And actually, and that was a real challenge for a lot of the guys in the program, because what we were expected to do when a behavior was called to our attention was say, you are right. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I did that. And what I was thinking at the time was whatever. And next time, instead of thinking that way, I'll think this way and I'll behave this way, and then I won't have that issue. And then you sat down and that was it. And it was no big deal. But the problem with a lot of the guys in prison is that they felt like they were being snitched on. And that's not okay in prison culture. Snitches get stitches, as they say. And again, you're often called out on behavior that's, embarrassing or personal or whatever. And so people would get defensive and start making excuses for their behavior, which was not what the treatment specialists wanted to hear from us. They wanted to hear, acceptance and like, yes, you're right, I did that. Yeah. Being responsible for your behavior.
Well, and I found it so much easier to go, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I really did do that. Wow. Instead of like, well, I didn't really mean to do it, and I did it because you did so and so, so and so. It's like, oh, it's such a relief just to go, thanks. Yeah, you're right. That was a shitty thing to do.
Yes, it is. It's so much easier to be fallible, and to be an actual human who makes mistakes. And I certainly do that with my current boss here, the priest where I work, who I just adore. And every once in a while, or like I have an annual evaluation with him. And we get along great, and he likes the work that I do, and so he doesn't ever have, huge things to address with me. But every once in a while, he'll say, I was noticing this. I noticed the way you interacted with this person, and I think this might be contributing to that. And so I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. That's exactly it. And it's so easy to just say, yep, I was wrong.
It just takes all the like power out of it.
Yeah.
Doc, I neglected to introduce you. I introduced you personally, my connection to you, but I forgot to say you're a professional musician. You work at the University of West Georgia. You work for the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra Chorus. You work at a church, you work at a synagogue, all musically related.
Correct. Yeah.
So, yes, so I forgot to say that in my introduction. So now you can kind of frame, here's this professional musician, well trained, well educated in prison.
Yeah. So actually, that was another thing that I have to tell you that I was really lucky in prison for many reasons. The drug rehab program being one of those. But another thing that I allowed me to count myself lucky was that in the federal prison where I was, we had a really pretty extensive recreation department, which included like a band room where a rock band or a jazz band could practice. And I was in both a rock band and a jazz band. There was a piano studio, and I taught 20 piano students a week there. I
At the
taught,
prison?
yes,
Damn.
I taught a music theory class. I directed two choirs while I was there, and I wrote a lot of music. And so I got to be me. Right, in kind of a normal way. Like I got to do the same things in prison that I did on a daily basis on the outside. So, gosh, I mean, when you can do that, you're so lucky, right? Because prison is not like anywhere else. It's kind of like if you imagine your normal world and then turn it upside down and backwards, that's what prison is like. And things that seem completely wrong are right there. And things that seem completely right are wrong there. It's such a hard environment to adjust to and to adjust out of also. Prison changes you, and it changed me. And I was only there for 2 years. It is an experience I will never forget. I don't want to forget. And I'm grateful for the lessons that I learned there. I learned so much about myself and about other people and about drawing and calligraphy. And I became certified in horticulture when I was there. And then, of course, when I say learning about myself, about all of my issues and my addiction and all that, I used my time really wisely there. I think as wisely as one could, or at least as wisely as I could. And I also used my time to try to bring a little light to that dark place for other people. Kind of always been a goal of mine in life is to bring people joy, and in a deep sense, and help them experience beauty. And so I started a service of lessons and carols there. I was there for two Christmases.
Oh, I just got chills.
And sometimes I get emotional talking about this experience because it was so powerful for me. I'll do my best not to.
Oh no, don't ever
But
apologize for being
well.
emotional. It's beautiful and it's what, I mean, I got chills and obviously, it resonates when you speak your truth from your heart. And Doc, how do you feel about that experience? Do you have a resentment about having gone? Do you have gratitude? And also, I don't want to get political, but I would like for you to address the positivity behind having programs like drug rehab, being able to do calligraphy, study horticulture, all of those things that kind of support people in rebuilding their lives.
So zero anger or bitterness or regret. And in fact, one of my best friends, when I was in prison there, had been a minister before going to prison. And so, because I had spent a lifetime working for churches as well, we really connected. And he sang in both of my choirs. And I did he study piano with me? I know he was in my music theory class. He's now also out, and we have reconnected, and I've visited him at his home in Florida. He asked me, he said, if you had it all to do again, to do all over again, would you have made the same decisions that led to you going to prison so that you would have that experience again? And without hesitation, I said, absolutely. Because of the good that it did for me, because I often say that prison saved me from myself. And I joked with you the other day on the phone, I wouldn't recommend it as a method. It is what worked for me, and apparently it was what I needed. So, and I made some great friends there. Gosh, like my cellmate, I won't say his name, had a great cellmate who, when I first found out I was going to be living with him, I was petrified because
Why?
he looked so scary. He had tattoos everywhere on his knuckles. He was missing a tooth. He was always scowling, right? And I just was scared to death. And I had only been there for a few days when I found out I was going to have to be moving in with him. And I said, "Cell, it's really a cubicle." We had huge dormitories with like imagine an office cubicle but made out of cinder blocks, and so like
Gotcha.
half walls, right? And so really a big open space. And so every time I had walked by his cubicle and had glanced in, he would be like scowling out at me, and I was just like, ah. So I found out that I was going to be moved into his cube because that was in the snoring section, and I snored, and people were not happy with
It.
people were not happy with me where I was in the quiet part of the dorm. So I told our counselor, our unit counselor, I was like, "Is there any other place that anybody else I could room with, please? I'm scared to death of him." He said, "You don't need to be worried. He's fine. I promise you don't have anything to worry about." So I was like, okay. I mean, I don't get to have much choice. You're in prison, like
I
that.
snore, you snore, we all snore
I
together.
mean, you don't get to make the rules in prison. So as it turned out, he had a gay brother, and I reminded him of his brother, and he took me under his wing and really protected me and taught me not that the place was scary, not that I needed a lot of protection, but I needed guidance, right? And that's what he provided. He provided some great guidance, and I will remain forever grateful to him because of what he did for me when I first got there, and he helped me understand how to move in prison. He'd been in there for a long time and was there after I left for a few more years as well. But he taught me a lot about drawing and calligraphy. He was a great artist, and he did illegal prison tattoos every night, and I saw him set up his gear, and at the time I thought, maybe I'll get a tattoo from him. But then I decided I didn't also want to run the risk of getting hepatitis C. And so
Good point.
I said, maybe I'll wait. And then once I get out of prison, if I decide I really still want a tattoo to commemorate the experience, I can get one in a more sterile environment. And so 2 Februarys ago, my partner and I flew to Texas, where that guy is now a tattoo artist
Oh,
in Corpus
God.
Christi, and I got a tattoo from him. And
Oh, Doc. Oh, my
So
goodness.
it
And for
commemorates
those
our
of you that can't see, it's music.
And so it commemorates our time together in musical notation, because I had the numbers, the time signature is 4-2, and I had a 4-year sentence that I only had to serve 2 years of, so 4-2.
Oh,
And
got it.
the notes are F, C, and C, which stands for Federal Correctional Complex.
You thought about this
Yeah,
one.
I did.
You did.
So yeah, and so I got to go see him and reunite with him, and that was wonderful, and express my gratitude to him. And and the crazy thing is that this guy, to say that we have different attitudes about really important things in life, would be an understatement, right?
Okay.
He is, I'm all about racial equality. He is a white supremacist. And yet, I love this guy, right?
Yeah.
I love him and I'm so grateful for him in my life and what he did for me. And so, it really did help me see how I could have radically different perspectives from somebody and still benefit in real, significant, important ways from their presence in my life, despite the fact that we have profound disagreements, And speaking on the programs and things that were offered at the prison, when I was there, of course, I had no idea what my situation was going to be like when I got out. Like, I didn't know if I was going to be able to find work as a musician again. I had no idea. And I was really afraid that I wouldn't, that people would hear that I'd been to prison and that they wouldn't want to hire me.
Instead, now it's your best calling card.
Right? Turns out.
I was in federal prison for 2 years. I said that about a friend of mine, and my daughter goes, "Oh, that's hot." Was in prison? Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, even the church where I'm working now is an Episcopal church. When they were going through the hiring process with me, I of course was honest with them about my history and upfront, and said, before we enter into a relationship, there's something that you need to know. They did the right thing, and they contacted the bishop, of course, to ask for advice. And would this be okay? And so the loving response from the bishop was that my journey of addiction and rehab and recovery should not be considered a liability by the congregation, but rather a gift to the congregation. So that was unexpected, and just another thing that I'm so grateful for. So while I was in prison, I didn't know that this was going to be the response from people when I got out. I had no idea what to expect. And of course, a lot of the guys in prison who also didn't know what to expect because they had never experienced it, we all sort of fed this negative picture for each other. Like, you're not going to be able to do this, you're not going to be able to do that. There are all these things that we felt like that were just not going to be open to us anymore. And it is true that there are a few things that are not open to me anymore, but really very few. And
You mean you don't want, can't go be a CPA or an attorney?
like there are some countries that I can't fly to, for instance, but there are plenty that I can, and the United States is very big, and I haven't seen but a small fraction of it. So I've got plenty of places to go, right? There's still plenty of things left for me to do. Supposedly, I couldn't run for a public office, but
I think that may have
that
changed.
might be different these days. So not that I would want to. But so while I was there, I was really, when I was in prison, I was really intent on preparing myself for life afterwards when I might not be able to do what I wanted to do. So I was learning these new skills, like learning how to draw and learning calligraphy and becoming certified in horticulture, which was a wonderful class and a really great experience. And I thought, if I have to mow grass when I get out of here, if I have to buy a cheap lawnmower and push it until I can afford a riding lawnmower and and build from, then I'll do it. In fact, my first job interview when I got out was with a company that provided janitorial services for the corporate headquarters of Chick-fil-A, and I was hired to clean toilets. As it turned out, that didn't work out because that company didn't want to have to do the extra paperwork that was required for me because I was still living at the halfway house, which required documentation. And this company was like, "You're an $8 an hour employee. Like, we don't
Too much work.
Much work. Sorry, man. It's not going to work out." Then I got hired to work at Krispy Kreme on Ponce de Leon Avenue
Oh,
in
boy.
Atlanta. And that was going to work out. And I got the uniform. And the next day, I was supposed to go and learn how to make the donuts, which I really wanted to do. And then I got a job offer from a church that I had applied for. Actually, two churches had kind of a bidding war over me.
Nice.
Right. And so they had offered me the same salary, which was not great, but I'm a felon and I'll take whatever I can get, right? And so I went to the one that I wanted more, and I said, okay, so these two church you two guys are offering the same salary. The other one's less work for the same amount of money. So if you want me to come here, you're gonna have to up the salary. And so they increased it by 25%,
Love it.
which is not a bad increase, right? So I went there and I served there for almost 3 years until I came to my current job. So and once I got that job, I was like, okay, it looks like I can be a musician after all. I don't have to,
Make donuts.
yeah, even though, there's nothing
You
wrong with
were
it.
happy to do that, probably.
I was so happy. Like I was so happy to be working at Krispy Kreme. And I would have been actually, I would have been happy to clean toilets. Like I was, because after prison, everything is so much better. Like there's no place that's worse than prison, So I would have
I
been
would
so happy.
love for you to recount what you were telling me about being at your sister's house and what that was like that first day or
Yeah.
two.
Okay. So I was in prison for I think 2 weeks less than 2 years. And then I was at a halfway house. My participation in the drug rehab program earned me a year off of my sentence, 6 months at a halfway house, and also I got 6 months off for good behavior, which is why a 4 year sentence became a 2 year sentence. There is no such thing as parole in the federal system anymore. So that's just a little side note. So when I left the halfway house after I'd gotten the job at the church, which was the requirement for being able to get out of the halfway house early, you were guaranteed 6 months at the halfway house. And then at the end of those 6 months, if you didn't have a job, you still had to go. But if you got a job before that, then you could go and be on home confinement, which is what happened to me. So after 5 months of looking for work, I finally found a job at this Catholic church. And the first night I was at my sister's house, because you had to move in with family at first. After I'd been at her house for a few minutes and was just enjoying being with family, and in real freedom. Well, I still had an ankle monitor on, but basically real freedom, in an actual house. I was like, I think I need to go take a shower. And so when I went into the bathroom and closed the door, I realized that I was going to be taking a shower in a room by myself for the first time in 2.5 years. And
Wow.
I thought, wow, this is awesome. Like, it's just me in here. And then after the shower, I stepped out onto a bath mat and felt my toes in the bath mat. And that feeling was just delightful because for 2.5 years, I'd always stepped out onto a cold tile floor. So then later that night, when it was time to go to bed, I climbed into an actual bed, a real, with a real mattress and box springs and nice linens on the bed and really great pillows. Oh gosh, my prison pillow. They're like plastic coated pillows,
Oh, yuck, yeah.
right? They're terrible. And you have a we had a pillowcase to go on top of them, but it still feels like plastic underneath there, right? They're just and they're thin and they've been, you were not the first person to have them and you're not going to be the last person to have that pillow either. Like they, everything gets used and reused there until it just wears completely out. As I got in bed, I was so struck by the comfort that I was experiencing that I didn't want to miss it. And so I couldn't sleep because I was so distracted by the comfort of a bed. And I had at least had three hots in a cot, like I at least had a place to lay my head and something to hold me off the ground. Imagine a person who's experiencing homelessness, who even less than that.
So it's those little things that we in our daily lives take for granted that all of a sudden were in stark relief for you.
Yeah. And remain. And it's I've been out for over 10 years and that feeling of gratitude has remained with me. And it is a constant presence in my life. If somebody tells me they are bored, I'm like,
Oh, dear Lord, that must, do you want to just whomp them upside the head?
you have no idea what boredom is until you've been in prison. Like I'm like, you're bored. So you realize that you can go anywhere and do anything that you want right now. Like you can hop in a car and drive somewhere and do whatever you want to do. I'm like, have you ever counted the dots in a ceiling tile? I have. Have you ever counted the dimples in the cinder blocks around your cubicle? I have, because when you are on lockdown, because somebody did something stupid, you didn't do anything wrong, right? But somebody else in the prison did, and so everybody's locked down. And you've read all of your books, and you don't have any more paper to practice calligraphy on, and you certainly don't want to talk to your cellmate anymore because you're sick to death of that person. You have to do something, so you count the dots. So please do not tell me that you are bored when you have an endless choice.
Yeah, when you can walk out and watch the clouds flow by.
Right, without being surrounded by barbed wire, you know.
Right. And go to a tree and watch the leaves blow. Yeah.
Like, just you can really, I promise you that you can find something to do that will keep you from being bored. And if you can't, then I think the real problem is not that you don't have anything to do, is that you are a boring person.
Yeah. Thank you.
Like, if you can't figure out something to do.
Yeah, forget about boredom. Let's talk about freedom. All right, we've been talking to Doc Anderson, a professional musician in Atlanta, an old friend of mine. We've been talking about his addiction, his recovery, and his stint in the federal pen. And we're going to come back and talk to Doc more about appreciating the little things, the everyday things in life. I'm Lisa Smith Henderson. This is Lili Logic. Go visit us at lililogic.com. And you can also get us on any of your platforms. Check us out on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Facebook. See you next time.